VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this week I'm joined by Oliver Kay, Stuart Robson, and making his seasonal debut, the pride of Merseyside, Mr. Tony Barrett. Very packed show today, obviously, with the news of Wayne Rooney possibly falling out with Manchester United, the Liverpool derby and John W. Henry taking over, and, as revealed in the Sunday Times, allegation of cash for votes from two FIFA executive committee members. We're going to start today on Merseyside, Everton and Liverpool. Now, since there isn't much going on at Liverpool, Ollie, I'm going to start out by asking you about Everton. I thought with a lot of players missing, among them, of course, Marouane Fellaini and a bunch of others, they came out of the gates very strong and probably maybe showed John W. Henry in the stands that, pedigree only counts for so much.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at Everton's performance, I mean, Roy Hodgson was suggesting, afterwards that it was that Liverpool were hard done by. I didn't think they were at all hard done by. I thought Everton were by far the better team in the first half. They were 2-0 up after 50 minutes, deservedly so, and I thought they were comfortable, not overly stretched, overly exerted after that. And you look at from 1 to 11 with Everton, you look particularly at someone like Phil Jagielka or someone like Mikel Arteta and Yakubu up front, who I thought had the best game I've seen him have for a long time. I thought Everton were better all over the pitch. And you say it's not all about pedigree. It's about attitude, it's about energy, and it's about quality. And Everton looked better in all three of those departments.
Stuart, since Tony doesn't like answering questions about Everton, I'm going to ask you. Yakubu, he's had his injuries, he's on and off, but when he plays the way he did yesterday, where he gives you the size, the strength, the pace, he's kind of hard to stop.
He certainly is, but he actually worked hard at his game yesterday. That was the key, because quite often he looks lazy, doesn't make movements outside the box, he can be easily knocked off the ball. But yesterday he looked as though he wanted to play. And Everton, all round the pitch, they won the battle. And you have to earn the right to play. And Everton earned the right to play right from the first minute. And Yakubu was one of those players. Used his strength, he made good runs, he backed into the opposition centre-half. He did everything right in the game. And he was the leader, really, for Everton to get in and around the box.
Yeah, I just want to ask you about one thing that this thing which was replayed endlessly on Match of the Day, where Yakubu broke, and then I think it might have been Skrtel he knocked off.
It was the midfield player,
Raul Meireles. Yeah, I think gives away about 40 pounds from.
Yeah.
Isn't that a kind of a foul when the ball's on the other side of you and you just barge it?
You have to be within playing distance of the ball to be able to use your shoulder and barge somebody off the ball. But I quite like that. I thought he looked strong, he looked aggressive, and Morelis knew it was coming. He should have been stronger and stood up to it, but he didn't do so. And it looked, that was the difference between the two teams, not just the quality of the football, but who wanted to win more. Everton wanted to win the game more.
Possibly waiting for a foul there. Okay, sorry Everton fans, but I hope you'll appreciate that this week is a bit of an unusual week. So that's us done talking about Everton today, unless Tony's got something very significant to say. And instead, Tony, I want to ask you about this. After the game, Roy Hodgson came out with some unusual comments. He said that Liverpool played well. And then he said, would be sad if I had to shoulder all the responsibility for what's gone on, especially in light of the players' performances, which kind of seems to be a contradiction. I mean, did they play well or did they play badly or what?
I think he was caught between two stools just simply because he was trying to protect the performance and defend the performance that was indefensible. But equally, he doesn't want to shoulder all the blame, as he says. He wants to see a spread. So he wanted to protect the players, but he also wanted to protect them, himself. And it was impossible to do so. Liverpool were wretched. The tactics were non-existent. Liverpool did not have a strategy. There was no clear plan set out. There was no idea of how they were going to get from their own box to the opposition box. And so there was no strategy. There was no teamwork. There's no great attack and threat. There was no organisation in defence. And so when he tried to defend it, I just think he got himself into a terrible muddle, where he would have just been much better coming out and saying, look, we played really poorly today. I'm the manager. I take responsibility. And left with that. But
would you agree with me, Tony? He said afterwards that was our best performance of the season or something like that, with the second half performance. I actually think, and it's an indictment, right? I mean, I'm not saying he's deluding himself here, but it's an indictment of Liverpool this season, that was one of their best. That second half performance was just about as good as they've played in some ways.
No, I agree 100%. And that's the most frightening thing of all, the fact that was up for debate. Liverpool didn't score a goal in the second half. They conceded one. They didn't play particularly well. They didn't have a great threat. Everton allowed them to have possession because, as David Moyes said, he didn't see a great threat coming from Liverpool. So when you put all that together, and that is apparently the best Liverpool have played, that is a frightening concept. But there is some reality to it, because apart from 15 minutes in the second half against Arsenal, that's Liverpool. Every team who played against Liverpool this season, including Northampton Town, have been the better side.
Stuart, now the prevailing narrative seems to be, and we've touched upon this in weeks past, that this is all Rafa Benitez's fault. But I can't help but look at this group of players and see that, on paper at least, it's the same guys who finished second 2 years
ago.
Exactly,
yeah.
Minus Xabi Alonso, minus Mascherano, minus Insua, who nobody liked anyway, minus Benayoun, who was mostly on the bench, but plus Glenn Johnson, who, for better or worse, is the England right back, plus Raul Meireles, who cost 10-11 million pounds, plus Christian Poulsen, who Hodgson seems to love, plus Joe Cole, who the whole world seems to love, plus Jovanovic, who isn't a bad player. Does the buck stop with Hodgson? Or is it all Benitez's fault?
I don't think it's all Benitez's fault by any means. I mean, I think there's a malaise at Liverpool. The players don't seem to have a good team spirit. From what I hear, the players aren't particularly keen on Hodgson at the moment. But players always do that. When they're not playing well, who can they blame? They blame the manager. But it doesn't look as though they've got a really great strategy at the moment. When we've seen Roy Hodgson before, when we saw him manage it, you knew exactly what his team was trying to do. Whether it was defending, whether it was attacking, you knew their system, you knew the formation they were playing. I can't see that at Liverpool at the moment. I can't see where Steven Gerrard's meant to be playing. Yes, they was meant to be playing behind the main striker, Torres, but then when the game sort of started to disappear, he got deeper and deeper to receive ball, and he played like a quarterback for 10-15 minutes in the second half. And quite rightly, Everton dropped off. They knew that Liverpool could have possession and not hurt them, and I thought Liverpool were very, very poor. And a lot of it must now come down to Hodgson. If you buy a player like Konchesky, you're asking for trouble. Konchesky wasn't good enough at West Ham. He wasn't good enough at Charlton. He had a decent year at Fulham, but before that, I don't think he's a good player. I've seen so many faults in his game. I've watched him many, many times as a youngster. Never thought he was good enough for the Premier League, let alone Liverpool.
You're lucky your fellow member of the shaven-headed fraternity, Paddy Barclay, isn't here, because he'd set you straight on that. Tony, I wanted to just get from you a sense. I mean, Stuart said that some of the players aren't fully convinced by Hodgson. Now, all I got all these years is that Benitez wasn't warm and cuddly either.
No, exactly.
So if you don't like Benitez and you don't like Hodgson, maybe there's something wrong with these players. Is that what we're saying here?
I think what we're seeing is that there's been a shift in narrative on Benitez toward the end of his reign, and now that he's gone. And at the end of the time at the club, everyone was saying that the squad was okay, and all he needed was a manager who put an arm around them. Now that they've got a manager who does that and they're performing even worse, we're being told that the squad that Benitez left is the worst that's ever been bequeathed by a Liverpool manager. So people are having it all ways in order to criticise one manager. The squad finished seventh last year, and it finished seventh having underperformed a lot of the season, having struggled with injuries for a lot of the seasons, and that is an accurate reflection of that squad's quality. It is a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth squad. That's its talent. But now Roy Hodgson's come in and he plays a completely different type of football. He doesn't press high up the pitch, so therefore Torres struggles. He marks in a different way. The defenders have to do different things. And you can just see that he's struggling to get into this Liverpool team what he wants to. And obviously there will be players who will question that. And that is happening. We know that.
Which are the players that question it? Who are the players that question it? Is it still the same old two, Carragher and Gerrard, who seem to be running the club most of the time?
No, to be fair, I mean, Steve and Jamie, they have their own feelings on Benitez, and I think everyone's well aware of that. But I think with Hodgson, he's struggling more with some of the foreign players. I mean, yesterday, for example, Hodgson singled out Torres in the press conference, which was a very strange thing to do. It was Matt Dickinson asked the question about collective confidence within the team, and Hodgson's reply was, "You're talking about one player there," and singled out Torres, which was really strange. And I don't know what he was trying to do there. I don't know whether he was trying to trigger a response from Torres, whether he was trying to belittle, but it didn't, or whether to just question the way Jainism works, which Hodgson seems to do a lot. I don't know what his motive was.
Do you think he feels that as though Torres isn't trying hard enough for him?
I wonder, does he think that? Yeah, that's something else, but the Torres isn't. There were games last season when he could question Torres' efforts. That's not the case this season. The problem this season is he's been deployed in a way that doesn't suit him. He's chasing balls into the corner. He's having a diet of high balls aimed at his head. This is Fernando Torres. Get him in the box. Three times yesterday he got in the box, and three times he got shots on target. But it's not happened anywhere near enough, because Liverpool just aren't playing to his strength.
To broaden this out, Ollie, I tried to sort of make a mental list of, you know, if I were John W. Henry, what were the first things, you know, you need to do? The first one is obviously reduce the debt. He said he's going to do that to, I think it's between 2 and 3 million pounds a season servicing the debt, whereas right now I think it's certainly north of 20 million pounds. That's going to have a big impact. Obviously, the stadium. Now, I guess you guys already know this. I was still surprised to see that Liverpool haven't actually issued new season tickets since 1996. That's because Liverpool season ticket holders, when they can no longer afford their tickets, or when they die, or when they move away, they just sort of pass them on to their mates. So it seems to me that, you know, there's sort of 20, 30,000 people on Merseyside who would be willing to show up to watch Liverpool every week and give money to the club, who simply can't do it right now. And Liverpool's match day revenues are something like £30 million less per annum than Chelsea's, despite the fact that Chelsea actually have a smaller ground. Manchester United's are more than twice as high. So I'm guessing we can all agree that a new stadium is the first thing that John W. Henry has to do, Ollie.
Do you know, I actually don't think it is the immediate priority. If you look at that very well documented sort of waiting list figure, you look at Liverpool's crowds this season, they haven't been filling Anfield since the season began.
But that's Benitez's fault, surely, isn't
well,
it?
Well, oh yes. And basically, yes, there are however many 40,000, 50,000 season ticket fans on a waiting list. But if the team is playing as they are at the moment, I can't see people snapping up season tickets.
Tony, are you on board with this? Because, I mean, actually, it's a counter-argument to Ollie. I'd throw up Spurs, who actually have very good match day revenues, despite the fact that for many years they had a pretty mediocre side, simply because they were very aggressive in trying to fill out the stadium and getting the fans to spend money.
I think Liverpool is slightly different in that a lot of the support that Liverpool are looking to bring into Anfield is not from the city. It's from beyond, it's from other parts of the British Isles, it's from Europe, it's from even further afield than that. But the only way you're going to get people to travel to watch a football team, travel that far and spend that kind of money regularly, is if there's good football on show. And I think that's where I do agree with Ollie. The football at the moment is abject, there's no question about that. And that's why you've seen attendances drop off. It's very expensive. Liverpool is still a city which is deprived, which doesn't have the kind of wealth of other cities. Tottenham doesn't have those kind of issues. So Tottenham could do things that Liverpool can't. Liverpool can't keep prices high and not offer a good product on the pitch, because people just simply can't afford to pay to watch something which is an inferior product. And they're not going to do it either. The people are very disillusioned with the club in this part of the world at the moment. So there's all those issues which mean that Liverpool have to first they have to get the club right, because the club hasn't been right for far too long, and then they have to resolve the issues on the pitch, and then once they've done that, they can start addressing the stadium issue. But if they do the stadium issue first, then I think they could just be making the problem even bigger than it already
is. Look at Arsenal. Ever since Arsenal went to the Emirates, they haven't won a trophy. I mean, and Liverpool aren't in that position, where when Arsenal went there, they were fourth or fifth in the table when they the last season at Highbury. If Liverpool go now to a new stadium and won't have the money to spend on players, they could end up being relegated, and then you've got a real problem.
And you would go and watch Arsenal for the football, for the quality of football,
exactly,
the football purists. You wouldn't go and see Liverpool for that reason.
No.
I watched Tom Hicks's interview, and I mean, Tony, there was talk of a £1 billion lawsuit and so on. Has this guy gone away for good, or do you think it's realistic that he's going to go back and sue the club? And more importantly, is he just going to go and sue RBS or Broughton, which I really don't care about, because Broughton's filthy rich and RBS is a bank, albeit one owned by the taxpayer, or is there a chance that this could have repercussions on Liverpool Football Club itself?
That's the fear. I mean, Hicks is examining his legal options now. There's nothing to stop him chasing the club now. There's nothing to stop him chasing personal damages from the directors and from Broughton and probably RBS as well. He's a man on the brink on so many fronts. And Tom Hicks is not the kind of character who'll just walk away and accept his fate. I think he's going to keep on fighting. And all the rumblings I'm hearing is that there could be legal ramifications for the next couple of years, which, if so, and if they do impact on the club, it will be, and I hesitate to use the word, but it will be disastrous, because Liverpool cannot become embroiled in the kind of situation that they've been in for the last fortnight in courtrooms throughout the land, the sense of attention, because as much as people say it's not a distraction, it is. Everyone was talking about Liverpool last week, and anyone who thinks the players weren't and the manager weren't is kidding themselves.
Okay, lots more we could talk about Liverpool here, but let's move on to United and West Brom. The game finished 2-2. I think it's the umpteenth time this year that United have let a two-goal lead slip away, and it happened at home nonetheless. But we have to start with Ollie, your exclusive in Monday's game. About Wayne Rooney. You want to sum it up for us and tell us how you see things shaking out?
Well, I got a call yesterday telling me that Rooney had informed United that not only that talks were on hold, which had previously been known to be the case, but that he was not under any circumstances going to sign a new contract with the club, that his relationship with Alex Ferguson was irreparable as he sees it in the short term, maybe long term, who knows, and that he wants out. He's made the decision that he wants out, and I think it's as simple as that.
Stuart, is this, I mean, you were a footballer, when you had contracts coming up, of course Rooney's contract expires in 2012, but did you ever resort to such
Well, I suppose I was Arsenal's Player of the Year in whatever it was, 86, and then George Graham took over, and I didn't like George Graham at all. I didn't like his style of play at the time. I didn't know he was going to be successful. It was his first season. I didn't like the manner in which he dealt with the players. I didn't like the manner in which he dealt with me, and my contract was up at the end of the year, and I did everything. He did everything to get rid of me, and I did everything to go, so I moved to West Ham for a lot of money. I wanted to go to Everton, but he made me go to West Ham. So, you know, once you fall out with the manager, I fell out with Bobby Gould as well, it's very difficult to repair that damage, very difficult, and then the player is always looking to go somewhere else.
Tony, what gets me in this story is it seems that a lot of this information about, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, about what's going on between the two of them isn't coming from the Rooney camp, it's coming from United, and therefore, and maybe I'm just being a bit conspiratorial here, has the blessing of Ferguson and or Gill, even though, of course, today they've denied such a rift. What's your take?
The funny thing is, last summer someone told me, someone involved in football but not at a particularly high level, actually told me that Rooney was unsettled, he was unhappy. I mean, I think he was already doing the rounds by then anyway, so it was no great surprise, but he said to me that Manchester City had already made an approach to him and we're offering big, big money. And I sort of talk about a pinch of salt. You hear these stories all the time, but you just wonder the last couple of days have made you wonder just what the situation is. Has Rooney been agitating for a move? Would United, with their financial situation, be happy to let him go? Because Ferguson will know better than anyone else whether he feels he's got the most out of the player that he can. He will also know whether he feels that the player is now maybe getting too big for his boots. So you just wonder whether all those things combined have created this situation where United would be happy to let him go, and therefore there's information coming out from their side of things, because I think it's now very clear that he will be moving on. And I find it terribly sad, because for me, Wayne Rooney and Manchester United have been a perfect fit. I think he became the player that he is under the tutelage of Alex Ferguson. So for him to fall out with him so markedly is sad for him, sad for United, and I think it'll be sad for football, because I'm of the opinion that wherever Rooney goes now, we won't see him play in the same way that we saw him play at United the season before last.
Ollie, Wayne Rooney turns 25 years old this week. I'm just wondering if there is tension between him and Fergie. I mean, the fact of the matter is, while it does seem that Fergie's eternal, I believe he's 69 years old, or he's about to turn 69. Wouldn't Rooney figure that he's going to outlast even Sir Alex at Old Trafford, and that, you know, maybe it makes sense to bide your time a little bit and see the way things shake out, a little bit like perhaps the way Roy Keane did back in the day? I mean, people forget that Roy Keane only let his contract run all the way down before he extended it.
Yeah, that was my that was a theory that I put to the people who were giving me.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Information last night, and I said, look, surely this will blow over. Surely, you know, it's a negotiating tactic. Surely, you know, things aren't that bad. Surely you can sort of tolerate a few more months of this, or, you know, which you'll have to anyway because of the transfer window, or wait till the end of the season and see how the land lies. But apparently, and this is, you know, this has come right back at me, the situation is impossible, irretrievable, irreparable, call it what you like. Do you know what, the thing that struck me last night as more and more of this came out, and speaking to people around the club and around the dressing room, I'm actually surprised he was even in the 18 on Saturday, having not played the previous couple of matches. Things are apparently that bad that, you know, I'm surprised he was in the 18, and I just wonder whether he'll figure on Wednesday in the Champions League against Bursaspor, bearing in mind this circus is just going to get bigger and bigger.
Have any players railed with Sir Alex Ferguson and then come back? You know, you look at Van Nistelrooy, he did, and then was left, obviously sold. You look at David Beckham, he got sold. And Ronaldo, you know, after Little got sold.
That's a popular narrative that, you know, that Sir Alex is happy to have out there. But, I mean, I know for a fact one player who railed violently with Sir Alex Ferguson and then had his way. And that's Roy Keane. Now, I'm not suggesting that Wayne Rooney is a Roy Keane type figure, but, you know, it was Roy Keane who ultimately was responsible for Juan Sebastian Veron leaving Old Trafford. That was a flat-out row, and that was a situation where Sir Alex backed up. Now, it might have been the only time in his career, but I just wonder, I mean, if you're the bean counter, if you're Gill, if you're Glazers, if they take an interest in this, and they have to weigh the two things up. I mean, as great as Sir Alex has been, he's got a lot of miles on the clock. Mm. Wayne Rooney's got, you know, 8 or 9 years of top-level football left in him. Are we sure that they're going to throw all their support behind Sir Alex if the situation is really that bad?
They might have some backing up from the sports scientists who are saying, we're looking at Wayne Rooney's lifestyle, what he gets up to off the field, whatever it be, and he's actually not going to get fitter. He's going to get worse and worse as the time goes on. You know, even when you look at his body shape, it's not a great body shape for a footballer. I mean, he is powerful and he does run, but he still carries a little bit of fat on him. And if the sports scientists look at it sometimes, they can say, actually, he's getting less fit with each season.
I would have thought that his off-field activities actually helped his fitness. He seems to be quite strenuous off the pitch. He doesn't seem to be... this is a loaded question anyway, so I've got my own theories on what will happen. But if Wayne Rooney does leave Manchester United, who do you think will be at the top of Ferguson's wish list?
Well, you look at the cash that Man United have got for, you know, have raised over the last... you know, the last year or so, the sales of Ronaldo. Ferguson has been telling everybody that there's no value in the transfer market. Well, why should that change just because they've sold Wayne Rooney for what would no doubt be a knockdown price? I mean, if there's no value, if they've still got money burning a hole in, you know, their pocket, as they like to suggest, you know, who is to say that United go out and sanction a £100 million spending strip?
So you can just replace Rooney with Kiko Makeda then, and Bob's your uncle, right?
Or Bebe, or Mam Diouf, or Danny Welbeck. You know, obviously the succession has been planned meticulously.
But, can I throw a question at you, though, what I've floated before? If you are Malcolm Glazer, or whatever, and I know it may not be what you want to think about at this time of the morning, but you have to make a... If the situation is as bad as it's being depicted, if you have to choose between Sir Alex and Rooney, who do you choose?
Logically, given the things we've talked about, given the fact that Rooney is a whatever £50 million asset, he's young, he's got years ahead of him. Logically, you would probably say Rooney, but I don't think United can possibly say, you know, put one player's interests and one player's agendas and one player's, you know, hissy fit, really, albeit a big one, ahead of the club and ahead of a manager like Alex Ferguson. Although it might make sense financially, logically, to back Rooney and usher Fergie towards the door, I just think that would be the worst thing they've done in the history, and I don't see them doing that at all.
But surely an even worse scenario is Rooney gets sold for not much money, Sir Alex retires, and Gil leaves to go run the FA or do whatever else he wants to do, and then all of a sudden it's no Rooney, no Gil, no Fergie.
Well, United have to weigh that up. At the moment, I would guess they're being advised by their manager, the head of the football department, if you want to talk, you know, in sort of stupid HR terms, that this guy is, his attitude is all wrong. He's not doing it on the pitch. He thinks he's bigger than the club. He's presumably asking for money that United aren't willing to pay, and he's presumably being offered more money elsewhere. I see this ending only one way. I was deeply sceptical when I got the first couple of calls on it yesterday, but the more calls I make, the more people I speak to, the more this seems like it's bigger than, you know, far bigger than I imagined, far bigger than a far bigger problem than I envisaged there being last week, and it just points to one thing, which is Rooney leaving, whether it's in January or in the summer.
West Brom fans, please, please accept my apologies. I hope you understand that this week we can't do too much talking about your team, but suffice to say, my man Robbie D is doing a fantastic job. I thought was very impressed with West Brom. Even two goals down, they kept going for it. They play football the right way. No Peter Otamendi. By the way, United, I thought, were an absolute mess defensively. Would have liked to analyze it with you, Stuart, today. Mm. And it's not just Van der Sar. I've had enough of people talking. He's the top goalkeeper in the world, top five or whatever. I think, actually, he has made more than one screw-up in his career when he was younger, and the positioning seems all over the place defensively for United. And we can't just blame everything on Evra and the World Cup hangover.
Of course not. I mean, but West Brom for the first half were abysmal. you know, you may say Roberto Di Matteo, West Brom played well. They were abysmal in the first half defensively. They tried to play a high off sideline. The two fullbacks kept on going back in. Manchester United let the game slip. This wasn't the West Brom that came to the Emirates and outplayed Arsenal all over the field and pressed high up the pitch. They were scared of the game, West Brom, to start with, and they got lucky in the end. And then the last 20, 25 minutes, they then started to play as they should have done and how they played against Arsenal at the Emirates. They defended well all around the field. They counter-attacked with pace and real purpose, and they looked a good side again. But for the first 60, 70 minutes, they were a poor side, West Brom.
All right, so Robbie D, if you're listening, please heed Stuart Robson's advice. Don't get too big for your boots. You were rubbish in the first half. Huge story in the Sunday Times yesterday, our sister newspaper, the Insight team, basically doing a bit of undercover reporting and investigative journalism. What they did was, for those who missed the story, is they posed as consultants for a consortium of American companies linked to the United States World Cup bid. Of course, the United States not involved with anything. Just want to make the clear legal disclaimer here. But what they did was they approached sort of FIFA fixer types, members of the executive committee. And what seems to emerge from this is that there are at least two members of the executive committee that, if you as a private company say, hey, listen, I'm willing to donate some artificial pitches to your constituency, your country, they can guarantee a vote for the candidate of your choice. That's certainly what was suggested here. Now, FIFA are not commenting on it. They've gone on lockdown. They've advised all their executive committee members not to talk about this. The first question I want to throw out to you, Wally, is we're often so cynical about FIFA and corruption and so on. So the question comes naturally. Are you surprised?
No, I'm surprised that anybody was willing to say so much, albeit tacitly, I suppose. But no, I'm not surprised at all. I think it's a great story and a great get from the Sunday Times and so on. But it's not even vaguely surprised that this kind of thing goes on. And I guess the question is whether whether that it is in any way acceptable that there might be some kind of implied trade-off for votes.
Now, Tony, I know you're a keen follower of politics, and generally the way it works, I would assume, is if I'm a politician and I need your vote, I might go and build a playground or a school or some roads in your area, and you back me. Is this so different?
No, I don't think it is. I think what you're referring to there is a kind of plan and gain situation where a big company, say McDonald's, will come in and say, we want that site. And in return, we'll put on a pedestrian crossing so the kids can obviously cross the road to the McDonald's in safety while they go and get the heart disease and the burgers and all the rest of it. So that kind of thing does happen. And once that kind of thing, plan and gain, I think it is a dangerous precedent in politics. So I don't think it is such a major leap from that to the more corporate way, where people say, well, in return for your vote, I will give you money. I don't see what the massive leap is there. And I think that kind of precedent that we allow to flourish in the normal world economy is one which, if it's in the wrong hands, it is twisted in such a way, it's tweaked. And as everyone knows, as soon as there's money involved, there's big money to be gained. There's going to be somewhere down the food chain, there's going to be someone who's going to be accepting backhanders. And I think that, as Ollie said, the only surprise in this case is that anyone would be surprised. It's a massive, massive tournament, the World Cup, for the local economy, for whoever wins it. So there will be people who will be willing to go to extra lengths to try and get it. And the worry is that there'll be people on the other end who will help them do that. And so I don't know how you get around that. If there's so much money involved, then there'll always be people trying to take advantage of it.
Stuart, if some faceless money-grubbing corporation pledges to build a bunch of artificial pitches in country X in exchange for their vote for the World Cup, would it be really naive for me to say that ultimately the kids will be able to use those artificial pitches in country X might be the ones who benefit?
Well, they could benefit, but it'd be interesting to see what England are offering these some of these delegates for their vote. You know,
surely England are offering nothing but a wonderful time when they get here.
Oh, well, I'm sure they aren't. I'm sure there's all sorts of things can go on. It won't just be, we always sort of say, all the other people are doing it. I'm sure that England have offered something in return, not always illegal, but they've offered something in return for votes.
I should point out that one of these executive committee members, and I think this will come out today in the press if it hasn't already, the Nigerian gentleman named Sadamu, he says that he smelled a rat from day one and that he reported these meetings, you know, before the Sunday Times story came out, and that he was actually trying to do a bit of investigative work on his own, that, you know, he'd been offered these inducements. Well, we'll see who believes him and whether and how this all plays out. There's suggestions that the decision, which is due for early December in Zurich, ought to be delayed. I mean, if you were Sepp Blatter, what would you do? For the good of the game, of course.
Do you know what I would do if I was Sepp Blatter? I would turn the clock back about 6 or 10 years to when the first more serious allegations of corruption came against FIFA and the executive committee, and I would investigate it very fully and very properly at that point. I think FIFA have been very complacent and very let's say dismissive about the about previous allegations of stuff that's far more serious than this. I don't want to go into it here. And
you're talking about credit card stuff.
Well, yeah, and other stuff.
It's all on the record. Google it. There's a judgment in a New York court. I'm going to be very careful what I say next, but you can go and look at it if you like.
Yeah, but I mean, it is very, very clear to anybody who's bidding those to the World Cup that it's not just the case of who's got the best stadium, who's got the best infrastructure, who's got the best transport, etc. Who's got the biggest TV audience, fans, etc. It's about it's about scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. To say that England aren't doing similar things is completely naive. Last month we had David Beckham in Trinidad launching a football academy there. Was it a coincidence that it was Trinidad? No, because they've been, because Jack Warner is on the FIFA committee. They previously went out to Trinidad to play a game. They're desperate to get Jack Warner's vote because Warner is seen as the key to 4 or 5 other votes. You know, England are doing things in the hope of getting votes. It's just this slightly murkier situation where a guy is on camera saying, yes, I will vote if you do this, and that is more of a problem, but it doesn't surprise me at all.
Tony, I threw this question at Ollie before. I'm going to throw it at you. If you were Sepp Blatter, what would you do immediately about the bidding process for 2018, 2022? Would you allow these these two exco members to vote? What are your options?
I think there's got to be a thorough investigation of exactly what they said and what they plan to do, and if the gentleman in question did lodge an official notification with his Nigerian FA to the effect that he knew there was a problem and that someone was trying to stitch him up or that there was some corruption coming his way, then he has to be exonerated. If that's not the case, though, and maybe the complaint came after he was outed or some way down the line, and I think his participation would have to be in doubt. But you can't have any faith in FIFA doing the right thing. That's the thing that football fans have become used to. Whatever it is, be it racism, corruption, they do play a Pontius Pilate role. They let things happen and they let it get to situations whereby you do get national newspaper exposés, and they shouldn't be allowed to get to that stage, because they will be aware of anyone. They will be at committee meetings where someone will say, I think this person needs a little bit looking at, and I don't think they ever act on that kind of information. And it's as I said, it's exactly the same with racism. They allow it to go pretty much unpunished with the kind of stupid fines which make no difference, and they do turn a similar blind eye to corruption. Unless they do come down on it properly, and this is a good opportunity to do so, then it will continue.
So let's move on to what I like to call quick hits, and my producer Chris Skinner foolishly still calls off the fence. Battle lines are drawn. Danny Murphy and Arsene Wenger on one side, Big Sam, Tony Pulis, and Mick McCarthy from Barnsley on the other. It all seems so simple. But then we get Jack Wilshere's tackle on Saturday. Ollie, where does this rank, and does it leave Wenger and the rest of the purists with egg on their faces?
Well, I think the moment that Arsenal had a player sent off for that kind of tackle, or Fulham perhaps had a player like that sent off, or Danny Murphy gets booked for a late tackle, there was going to be, you know, an awful lot of people pointing fingers and saying, "Aha, you're just as bad as us." And I don't think that kind of polarisation of the debate is healthy. I think Murphy made some good points, some excessive points. I think Wenger's made some extremely good points. No, there we go. I'll be quick, but I think there's a very legitimate debate to be had, but it's not very healthy when it's so polarised and people are just one side or the other.
Aston Villa hold Chelsea to a 0-0 draw. Stuart, what is Gerard Houllier doing right?
Well, at the moment, he's keeping the good things that Martin O'Neill instilled in his team. He's got some good shape, but he's also now rotating his players, which Martin O'Neill didn't do. So he got Bay at right back, Rio Coca came into the team. And he keeps swapping Ashley Young's position around. When he thinks he can play him behind the front player and cause problems, he does that. When he needs to make sure his midfield is tight, he plays him out on the left wing. He's doing a good job at the moment, and they look a fairly strong side.
Yeah, Rio Coca ran around like a maniac in that game. I think he probably had a lot to prove.
He certainly had a lot to prove, yeah.
Spurs beat Fulham 2-1, but there's a cloud over Tom Huddleston's goal. First, the linesman disallows it for William Gallus's offside. Then referee Mike Dean gives it, supposedly because Gallus was not interfering with play. Tony, you understand the rule, don't you? Was Dean right?
It was the right decision. The linesman was right to raise his flag to alert the referee that a player was in offside position, but the referee took everything into account, decided that the player who was ruled offside wasn't interfering with play, and that to me is the way it should be, and I don't actually understand the controversy. Similar situation yesterday with Yakubu, who clearly was interfering with play, and he stood right in front of Pepe Reina for Mikel Arteta's goal, but the linesman didn't raise his flag, so the referee couldn't deem whether he was interfering, but I think the referee at the Spurs game was absolutely right.
Look like interference to me, but what do I know? Not good camera angles, put it that way.
Gab, one for you. Barcelona came from behind to beat Valencia 2-1, but things aren't quite right there, are they?
No, they're far from it. I think it was a tremendous halftime turnaround. I thought Barcelona were very poor in the first half against Valencia. But the big deal here is that the club has voted to sue the former president, Joan Laporta. The internal audit conducted by the current president shows that instead of the £7.9 million profit that Laporta said they had, they actually had a loss of nearly £70 million last year. And they have debts of some $376 million, which doesn't make for good reading, especially with financial fair play around the corner. It seems to me there's a lot of issues to sort out off the pitch, and as good as Pep Guardiola is, he won't have much impact there. Thanks for sharing your time with us. You can go to www.thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. I do mine on Mondays. Ollie K does his on Wednesdays. There are others dotted throughout the week. Game Podcast will be back next week, albeit without me. Allison Rudd, qualified referee, will be in the chair. Join her.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.